This is a production of Cornell University.
So, the time is now 12:15. I'd like to call this employee assembly meeting to order. We've got about 18 participants. I don't think we have any resolutions to formally vote on. Actually, no, I think we do have one that's being introduced, and then we would have to bring it up in new business in order to vote on it. I hope we have quorum. Gina, do you know if we have quorum?
Let me take a look.
I count about 17 EA members.
Looks like we have 19 now. Right. Everybody in the room is a member.
So let's get started. I want to do roll call. So I'm going to ask Michelle to do roll call.
Sure. Susan Berry. Joseph Canella.
Here.
Thank you. Marin Cherry.
Here.
Jackie Creaky?
Here.
Thank you. Jamie Duong?
Here.
Brenda Fisher? Brandon Fortenberry is here. Brian Goodell?
He was just on with Christine.
I see Andrea's here. Deborah Howell.
Here.
Thank you. Emily Ivory.
Here.
Rigel Lochner.
I'm here.
Christine Mahoney.
Here.
Virginia McCauley. Jen Michael. Ashley Miller.
Present.
I thought I saw her. Ellen Miller.
Here.
Mary Newhart. Michelle Podolak. Nasser Sadet. Kate, I see you're here. Kit is here. Laura Taylor. Jessica Townley. Catelyn Wilcox. Jessica Withers is here. And Lisa Zacharias. Okay.
Thank you. And now let's move on to the approval of minutes for November 18th and December 2nd. So let's begin with November 18th. Do I have a motion to approve those minutes?
So moved.
Michelle, and a second. Joe, is there any dissent? Seeing no dissent, November 18th minutes are approved. For December 2nd minutes, do I have a motion to approve those minutes? Kate, do I get a second? Michelle, great. Do I have any dissent for the December 2nd minutes? Seeing none, December 2nd minutes are approved. Let's move on to business of the day. So I'd like to turn the floor over to Brandon Fortenberry to discuss the student code of conduct outline of key changes.
Thank you, Hey. And I'm gonna try to present a quick PowerPoint, but I know sometimes that can be challenging on Zoom. So I'm gonna do my best and hope it works out. Let's see here. All right, can folks see a frosty, snowy tree picture there? I figured it was kind of an apropos background for impending snowstorm. For those of you who don't know, I'm the chair of the Codes and Judicial Committee for this year. I stepped into the role at the beginning of the semester from my role in the University Assembly representative, not knowing at all what I was doing. I had to figure out a lot of things very quickly because there was a pretty significant change that was impending, and that was the revisions to the Cornell Code of Conduct. And so I'm going to just outline some of the key changes here of what's kind of happened and what the next steps are. So starting with sort of the, let's see if it'll go. All right, so there's a lot of background here. There was a number of changes that kind of occurred over a period of time. This dates all the way back to 2017 when President Pollack asked the UA to take a look at the campus code of conduct and work with the presidential task force on campus climate to examine some concerns that were identified. The definition of harassment addressed the overriding concerns that the code was too legalistic, punitive, and unreadable, and in some cases, even inconsistent. And so with that ask, the University Assembly embarked on a pretty significant revision. It did hit some bumps in the road through the process. Ultimately, earlier this year, there were two codes of conduct submitted to University Counsel's Office that were then from the Student Assembly and from the CJC. Those two documents were compared and put together into a singular document, which was then approved after another round of revisions based on public comment from those changes on December 10th of 2020. So just some of the key changes here I wanna identify, or some of the input that was provided from the CJC and the public comments about the student code of conduct that was under review by the Board of Trustees. Some of the key initiatives were discussions around restorative justice, the jurisdiction of the code with the UA and CJC, involvement of the hiring process, again, for the UA and CJC, independence of the JCC, the standard of proof, public hearings, the ability to cross-examine, JCC's counsel being able to speak on behalf of parties, and the code amendment process. So these were sort of the key initiatives that were brought forth. Once that revision was identified by the University Council, taking the essay and the CJC document, merging that into a singular document, then putting that forward for public comment. That public comment came back, and that in conjunction with the CJC's input, these are the bullet points that were identified that really hoped to be addressed. And overall, the committee, the CJC, felt that most everything was addressed in some way, in some form or fashion. And we'll go over some of the key changes that kind of came about in this new code. First of all, as I acknowledged, this is now a student code of conduct. Previously, it was a code of conduct, so it was it would apply to any student, staff, or faculty. But now the conduct code is specific to students. And therefore, the jurisdiction of the code, as it previously was in the office of the JA, has shifted over into the Student Code of Conduct and Community Standards Organization, which will live in the office of the Vice President of Student and Campus Life. The conversation and the justification for that is around the fact that, you know, when this code came about 50 years ago, people didn't make careers out of student conduct. They didn't really make it a profession. And now it's really a very vibrant profession. And there are people who are in that field of work and have been for some time because they see the value and the importance of providing community standards and understanding how students are held accountable for violation of those in an effective way. And much around, as I spoke to earlier, around restorative justice. And additionally, the last bullet point on there, resolution, the ability for someone who does have a violation of the code in circumstances that are not as severe to be able to refer those to other areas of campus to be able to address those in a way in which the student can feel that they are supported in being able to address concerns in an alternative method as opposed to what they would feel as a legalistic process. There was the addition of the Good Samaritan Protocol, which is a protocol that's in New York State allowing for folks to be able to offer assistance in a situation in which there could be detriment to life or injury for a student and or anyone without fear of consequences. So an example may be if somebody is potentially in a drug overdose situation, folks might be afraid that if they bring that person in for help, they may face criminal charges. The Good Samaritan protocol kind of identifies that, as well a few other key things. I'm really kind of just giving a small piece of what that protocol is, but it's an excellent addition to the code. There was changes in the complaint procedure, and one very key piece was the standard of evidence. So the previous standard of evidence was the clear and convincing standard, and the overwhelming public and input from the CJC and other committees was that student code of conduct should really be utilized the preponderance of evidence. The clear and should maintain the clear and convincing. And that's really where the code ended up. The clear and convincing standard is the more rigid standard, i.e. it requires a higher level of certainty that the person did commit the violation. However, for one adjustment that was made is that organizations, student organizations, which now includes students in the fraternity and sorority organizations, would be held to the preponderance standard. Right, so I just said a mouthful of standards and preponderance and clear and convincing. So just want to clarify for individual cases, it is the clear and convincing, which requires a burden of proof higher than I believe it's more likely that it happened, that the person did this. I believe it's a 75%. I'm not an expert in all of those. And then the preponderance is basically it's more likely than not. So in essence, if it's at a 51% sort of view that this instance did occur, then they would be held accountable for that situation. And so the organizational standard is the preponderance and the individual is the clear and convincing. As well as I noted, the addition of language that allows for alternative dispute resolution if a case is brought forth and the committees or the groups involved see that there's a better way in which to resolve those as opposed to going through a judicial process, they do have that leeway to do so. So those are some of the key and fundamental changes. Now the next steps are really this code is voted on. It now is to be implemented. And as I stated earlier, this code is now in the jurisdiction of the Student and Campus Life Vice President, Ryan Lombardi. And he has until fall of 21, the start of the fall 21 semester to implement the code. However, he does have the ability to put the code into place before that time frame. So Ryan Lombardi has reached out to myself as the chair of the CJC and voiced a strong desire for collaboration to be able to transition this code from its current campus code of conduct into this student code of conduct. We'll be working with his office and other key members of the OSCCS, which was a newly created area, to work on how we move this code forward and make the transition. Additionally, we'll be working with the University Assembly as a CJC to identify, as you can imagine, with a title like the Campus Codes and Judicial Committee, this was really our key primary role. And with the change in jurisdiction, there's the question of, is that committee still going to exist and be operating beyond when this new code goes into effect? One thing I did forget to mention previously about the revisions is about the amendment process, and that any assembly is noted as being able to provide suggested amendments, which so in essence, the CJC can still exist and can be the group that does look at the code and provide thoughts and ideas around amendments to the code. It just changes a little bit what our overarching role is. And so that's something that the University Assembly will be kind of having some conversations around. And so that is it on my updates on the newest student code of conduct revisions that were passed, as I said, on December 10th, and will be going into place sometime before the beginning of the fall 2021 semester. So with that, hey, if there's happy to take any questions that folks may have.
Thank you, Brandon. So let's move into questions. Please use the hand raising functionality and I'll call on you if you have any questions in regards to the presentation on the student code of conduct. I see Gina has her hand raised. Gina?
Thank you for that great overview, Brandon. Having been immersed in this for the last 3 years, that was succinct, clear. Thank you very much. One of the things that I did want to point out, now that this is a very student, this is actually a student code of conduct, the one piece that will still remain that covers all faculty, students, and staff as a community standard is what's being called the Cornell Statement on Responsible Speech and Expression. This has been drafted and will likely go before the board at one of its spring meetings. With the anticipation that it'll be passed. Not quite sure where that will end up as a policy, as a statement, but it will still, that's the piece that was removed from the old code as a community standard. So that'll be a standalone piece.
Thank you, Gina. I appreciate the additional clarification there. That's an item that kind of got set aside because, as Gina noted, it did get removed from the code revision piece to be discussed for a separate piece. So I think that's clear. And I see that Joe had asked the question about the comparison between the old and new versions, and the documents are drastically different, such that there is no ability for them to be separate. However, there is between the first version and the second version, there is the ability to look at the revision, the red line revisions on between the first submission and the second.
Thank you, Brandon. Joe, you have your hand up?
Yeah, I was wondering how this work relates to the revision of the anti-bias policy, which could be something that triggers a student offense, and how that anti-bias policy revision relates to the work that's happening here?
That's a great question. You know, I think that there's a number of things in the code that were revised. One of them specifically was pertained to hazing, the redefining of what hazing is. The OJA was able to redefine what that is. As you know, obviously bias incidents are a part of the code of conduct. However, they sit separately in the Title IX office. So there is a separate process, and therefore there was a conversation in the beginning about that these two had to be tied to one another, that the student code of conduct had to adhere to the Title IX or the Policy 6.4 standards, and they are able to be separate. And that's where, you know, as I asked the question of the Title IX office about the standard of evidence for those situations, and that they are currently in the employee side, preponderance of evidence is what's being suggested, they can be separate. They can be separate evidentiary standards. So in essence, they are separate entities. Once it's decided that it is a bias incident, it fits within the Title IX office as opposed to the code of conduct. Gina, did I get that right?
You did. That was excellent yet again.
Thank you.
I posted a link to there's an FAQ that was released regarding the changes. And some of the other questions related to both the process and the outcomes. It's in the chat. It's sort of, it might have gotten lost, so I'll send it again. But if anybody has any questions about it, Brandon, you're doing an excellent job of fielding those questions. I'd be happy to pitch in as well.
Thank you. Are there any other questions, comments, concerns about this presentation? Okay, Ellen.
I just want to say I'm very pleased with the outcome of it, of staff sort of being removed from that and it being only a student code of conduct. I think that makes a ton of sense. And I'm grateful that it is being handled in the hands of the experts now, because it is a pretty overwhelming document. And thank you for all your hard work on it. And yeah, that's it.
Thank you, Ellen. I believe Jamie, your hand is up.
Yeah, I guess just sort of the opposite. I think that it's, I understand the reasons for it, but I do think that changing it from a campus code of conduct to a student code of conduct takes some of the buy-in out of it, that, you know, it's not, these are the things that we expect of all of our campus members, but these are the things that we are imposing on students. It becomes a little bit a different thing, but yeah.
Thank you, Jamie. Ellen, I see your hand is raised again.
I would actually like to ask Brandon to answer to your comment there, Jamie, because for me, like, I always thought it was so interesting that staff were included, because like, I'm an at-will employee. If you don't like the way I'm behaving or I'm not behaving appropriately, like, fire me. Or if I don't like what's happening, I'll quit. I'm not, it's a different situation for students who have to go through this judicial process, where you're not going to put a staff member through that judicial process. You're going to put them through an HR process.
Go ahead, Gina.
No, that's right.
Yeah, I can speak a little bit to it, and I think Jenny can probably clarify as well. This code of conduct was executed, I think, in the 90%+ range involving student situations. So the amount of staff in situations in which were officially adjudicated through this process were extraordinarily minimal. And to Ellen's point in regards to an HR process, you know, that there are standards within an organization of how a staff member is to behave, and that those things would be, in essence, handled more in that HR realm, as I understand it. And again, the amount of staff interactions was so small. And I think, you know, if I can speak to the ideology behind moving it to the student code of conduct, is to be able to enforce and include very succinct and distinct language around the expectations for the students as it pertains to things such as hazing and other areas as well that are very specific to student groups. And most many universities have this as a student code of conduct, as an overarching campus code of conduct. And so there were a number of inputs from different entities that felt that this document really should encompass primarily students. And the overwhelming evidence as it pertains to how many were adjudicated in the process really kind of pointed to that direction, that it was that piece. So I don't think that it's going to really change significantly any amount of the cases that would be involved in this process. And I would welcome Gina's additional input if there's any other perspective there.
Thank you for that. The only thing I'd add, and I think it may go to Jamie's concern about community buy-in, is that part of this same exercise, when the president charged the CJC and the UA to look at the code, was she had also charged a presidential task force on campus climate. And out of that came the core values, which the university has now adopted. So there is an overarching set of expectations and core values that we as community members, faculty, students, and staff are expected to adhere to and abide by. So there, that sort of came in at the same time this was evolving out.
Thank you. So we're going to, in the interest of time, have the final question from Brian. Brian?
Hi, just a quick question. In the case where a staff member is also a student, would they have a dual, is this like double jeopardy? They can get, they'd have to go through this process and also go through the HR process, or do they separate them somehow?
That's a great question. I don't know that I have a definitive answer on that, but I would identify that likely if a person is enrolled as a student, like fully enrolled, you know, many people take classes, that doesn't make them a student of the university. They're just taking coursework. But if you're enrolled as a student, you would be, I believe, and I can get clarification there for you from follow up, Brian. But I believe if you are enrolled as and accepted as a Cornell student, you would then be required to adhere to the student code of conduct. However, someone who's just taking coursework as a on the side, you know, I want to take a class here and there as part of the standard benefit of allowed to us all, that would be a separate sort of entity. Gina, would you agree with that statement, or?
I think it probably would, if we trace it back to the policies that apply. If you're an employee, you are going to be subject to HR policies, and those will, you know, I think, again, those are, your primary role will be determined, it will determine the policies to which you rise up. So if you are an employee taking courses, you're an employee first. If you're a student who also has a campus-related job, you're a student first. So it really depends on your primary role in university.
They have the same evidentiary standards?
The HR policies are there's no comparison.
Yeah, thank you, Joe. Please be sure to raise your participant hand if you want to communicate so that we can be sure that we get to everybody. Sorry, Brendan, did you have another comment on this?
Yeah, so just as far as like evidentiary standard, you know, HR wouldn't look at things in an evidentiary standard perspective. It would be a conversational understanding of the situation. And so again, that goes back to sort of, the separation of these two pieces. And I think just kind of to close there, I know we need to move on. I think the separation of these was really coming from a number of different input areas. And I think that it provides a different perspective on what this code will be and how it's implemented moving forward. And I think as well, I wanna just reiterate that this is separate from policy 6.4 and Title IX. Those two are very separate processes and procedures that can and do have different evidentiary standards at this time. So thank you, Hey for and everyone for your time. And I do welcome follow-up questions. If there are things that come up, please feel free to email me and I'm happy to get back. And Brian, I am gonna get a little bit more clarification from that regard as far as an employee that is specifically an admitted student and how that might be addressed. Thank you.
Thank you, Brendan. And again, if there are any additional follow-up questions, feel free to email Brendan separately. I want to make a motion to amend the agenda to move item number 5, introduction of student assembly liaison, up to agenda item 2. Do I get a second on that, Jamie? All right, Ellen, great. So I'm going to bring the floor over to Jamie for the introduction.
Thank you, Hey. As you all know, shared governance is important to us. That's why we're here in the Employee Assembly. And so in the interest of shared governance, I'm very pleased to introduce Claire Templeman, who is a freshman in the College of Human Ecology. And she will be joining us as the Student Assembly Liaison to the Employee Assembly. And I'll let her just say hello.
Hello, everyone. I don't know, Jamie basically covered it. So if you have anything you'd want to either communicate with the Student Assembly or anything to coordinate, just let me know.
Thank you, Claire. Thank you, Jamie. So I guess let's move on to the brief overview of the priorities poll. I have a PowerPoint presentation, so I am going to share that really quick. Here we go. So as you recall, in early November, we had issued the priorities poll, basically asking a very simple question of, you know, what do you think should be the Employee Assembly's top priority for 2021? We received 750 responses, which is a 21.4% increase in since the 2019 priorities poll that we issued. The total response this year represents roughly 10% of the Cornell staff population, according to the university fact book data. So as you can see, the number one priority is employee health and well-being. A lot of this is related to COVID, the impacts to the staff on concerns. And you'll also notice, as we move into this chart, the priorities poll of 2020 versus 2019, sort of how our priorities have shifted as a result of COVID. Previously, employee health and well-being, along with parking and transportation, were pretty much tied at the number one priority, but certain issues have really been pushed to the back burner, with COVID really being the number one priority. Employee health and well-being, COVID as a huge impact of that being sort of a big factor as we look into the new year. You'll notice that employee health and well-being has 226 votes out of the 750. And then you'll notice something like parking and transportation, which has historically been a very big issue for the Employee Assembly, really has sort of not been as big of an issue, but still something that we should keep our eyes on and concerned about. Followed secondly this year is campus climate, diversity, inclusion, and respect. This has not traditionally since last year and the year before been, you know, one of the major issues that the Employee Assembly has noted via the priority poll as a main issue. But, you know, as we sort of will see throughout this presentation, we'll get a sense of what the staff feedback has been. So the priorities poll feedback, we received 750 votes, but also staff submitted unique comments. So we received 288 unique comments. I'm going to refer to this as feedback here and after. So the feedback really provides us some really hearty information in why people chose the priority. It provides us with some suggestions, some guidelines, some guidance, and some helpful suggestions for how we can make improvements. Some people voted for a priority, but in their feedback, they'll say, even though I voted for this, I think this is really, truly the big issue you should be tackling. And I also want you to note that the priorities poll was initiated prior to the 1117 email from President Pollack indicating that the university would begin to provide full retirement benefits and salaries effective January 1. So there was a lot of feedback asking for the Employee Assembly to support, you know, providing full benefits, retirements, salary levels. And so I'm not going to include those comments because that was addressed. That's, I just wanted to let you all know because I'm going to pull key quotes and I'm not going to include any sort of feedback related to sort of these requests. So one of the key themes, you know, is ensuring safety, making sure that, you know, staff members on campus are safe, that people are following the necessary protocol, you know, following the necessary, you know, COVID training, making sure that the health insurance benefits are adequate, you know, a lot of concern about health overall. So that was one of the key themes. The number one key theme that I saw throughout the feedback, I would say a third of the written, you know, comments were about, you know, health and safety. And so I've also sifted through all of the commentary to kind of look at some of these suggestions that, you know, staff have provided. They've asked for us to ensure adequate health insurance, provide more safety training. Some have asked for shorter work weeks or more time off to balance the strain of powering through and sustaining the lift. You know, consolidating wellness programs in one place so that users can find them, more specialized programs to have more honest conversations on stress and mental health issues. Post-COVID, staff members want to have more remote opportunities for wellness, provide more opportunities to recognize essential staff, expanded counseling services, increase access to certain amenities. And so those are some of the suggestions. Another key theme from the employee feedback was prioritizing diversity. So a lot of the comments that I've seen really stress that right now we're in a time in our country where racial issues are really quite contentious. And staff have indicated that Cornell really needs to be, you know, more proactive about perhaps our efforts in relation to diversity and inclusion. I think that people have talked about how important it is that we do have, you know, the trainings, how we have to ensure, you know, that we're really thinking about impactful change. So some of these quotes that I'm showing, so the first two are quotes, basically highlighting what I said, that, you know, globally and then nationally, we do have sort of a reckoning with issues of diversity and inclusion. But we also need to think about how we can support our diverse community members, celebrate successes, how we think about searching, hiring, and promotions. And so some of the suggestions were creating programs or opportunities to teach staff members to have respectful conversations with people of different viewpoints, providing more programs and opportunities to offer staff assistance to staff who are under duress. This seems to be not related to diversity, but I'll have to update that. Create more programming geared specifically for staff to learn about diversity, DEI, more opportunities for staff to be involved in conversations at the decision-making level. So these are sort of some suggestions that I've highlighted. But moving back to this issue of employee health and well-being. So I've seen people talk about COVID from a physical health point of view, diversity, and then mental health has been a really big theme that I've seen throughout the commentary. All of these are direct quotes, unedited quotes from the staff feedback. A lot of people have mentioned stress, anxiety from their workloads. A lot of units are understaffed as a result of perhaps staff members retiring early. You know, there's a lot of concern as it comes to feelings of isolation. Some staff members live alone. There's a lot of just general anxiety and uncertainty around the pandemic. So I think it's taken a toll on a lot of our staff members, and you know, you really see it in the feedback. So I want to also note that I've provided all of the unedited feedback. So all 288 comments are available in the box. You all have access to it along with a written report that also summarizes all of this. So you all have access to this information, all of the feedback, and a written Word report on this as well. So as you can kind of see, you know, a lot of staff members are feeling kind of overwhelmed mentally. And so they've, you know, asked for different, you know, potential opportunities for wellness. They've asked for, you know, more programming, better information. I think that was covered in the previous slide with suggestions for improvement. But also we're seeing this sort of need to recognize staff, address the hiring freeze, address SIP for the upcoming fiscal year. Some of these are some of the suggestions related to how we can recognize staff. You know, as I had mentioned, some people had wanted to set a target date for ending the hiring freeze. That could potentially create, you know, a sense of relief for staff members who are really inundated with work. I think, you know, even within the employee assembly, there are staff members who are on teams where, you know, you're doing the work of 1.5 people. So it's really not uncommon to see that, again, we're sort of being asked to do more with less. Another issue that I've seen is, another key theme is parenting. So a lot of staff members are struggling right now with, you know, the fear of COVID, with the mental, you know, duress. But also if you're a parent, if you're working from home, you have to think about the balance between homework for your child care, and then how you sort of balance that with your own work. So I think there has been a lot of feedback about how, you know, we can help staff members who are sort of dealing with this added additional stress from parenting. Suggestions for improvement moving forward. So I'm sort of toggling between the feedback and then some suggestions. Some suggestions for improvement moving forward post-COVID is to encourage more remote work. A lot of individuals have indicated that if we increase remote work, we address other issues like sustainability, parking and transportation, employee health and well-being. A lot of staff members have mentioned that working from home has been a tremendous gift for them to be able to, you know, not have to worry about transportation, to be able to feel safe, to not feel as if, you know, they're sort of endangering their families by going into a place and really risking exposure. And then also post-COVID, there have been, you know, there has been commentary about encouraging, you know, the university to think more openly and more welcoming, be more encouraging of, you know, remote work. And so those have sort of been the big key themes. I would say half of the feedback has been about physical health, about mental health, about diversity, about parenting, about, I already mentioned diversity, I'm sorry. So those are the key themes, but I would say within each committee, there have been suggestions for improvement. So right now, all of the unedited feedback is available in the box, and there's a link. And also you all should have seen an email about it through the box. But after this, what I'm hoping to achieve is each committee will get a report on their key themes, along with commentary related to their theme, even though somebody might have chosen, you know, benefits. Perhaps the feedback is one directed towards diversity. So I'm going to basically create a committee report for each of the committees, kind of outlining the feedback that that is related to that committee. I'm hoping that during the employee assembly retreat, we'll be able to, you know, talk within our committees and then as a larger body to talk about these issues and these findings and think about, you know, what are things that we can tackle, because there is so much here in the priorities poll, so much in the feedback, and there's no expectation that we're going to address each of these concerns. I think the hope is to use this as a guide to say, we're seeing all of these issues and we're aggregating it, and here are some key focal points that we can work on and then start from there. So I think this priorities poll really is just that, a starting point. It's a guide. It's a way for us to say, we've collected information from the broader Cornell staff community, and we're going to work towards addressing some of these key issues. So that is the priorities poll in a nutshell. I'm sorry, that was quite a bit of words. So I wanna kind of ask if you guys have any feedback. I'm gonna go through basically from the top in the participant screen, all the hands that are raised. So Kit.
Hi, hey, thank you for putting that together. It's great that we have that to, like you said, guide us forward and our priorities. My question, so I can get kind of my head wrapped around the results, was, from what I remember, the priorities poll was like, was a ranking type of questioning. So how did that reflect in the results? Like, were the results based off of everyone's just their top priority, or was it like a ranked choice, kind of like how we did the EA elections, or how did that work with the results relative to the ranking?
That's a great question. So the results of this are whoever listed number one. So I'm really only looking at people who have, you know, place this priority as their number one priority, but within the individual committee reports, I'm going to show the rankings, because I think it's easier to report on, you know, on that measurement for the entire group versus going into each sort of, you know, issue and then seeing how it ranked. So I'm really kind of following sort of what we've done in the past, but within each of the individual committee reports, I'm hoping to provide a more sort of granular view on how this priority ranked. So that's sort of the process of how, you know, I've generated the graphs, and I hope that helps to answer the question.
Yes, it does. Thank you. And thank you for providing that information to our committees. Hey, I think you're muted.
Sorry, I was. Thanks. And next is Brandon.
Thank you. Hey. I just, again, appreciate that we have this opportunity to get information from the constituents on what they feel the important piece is. And would just like to reiterate and voice my concern as it pertains to the topic of diversity and inclusion. Having been on the university assembly, I've had a lot of interaction with the student assembly and have seen very recent challenging situations in the student assembly as it pertains to a resolution that was brought forth as it pertains to disarmament of the Cornell police. And while I don't want to speak to that particular resolution, what I do think is important to speak to is that even in our student community, a student member who brought this resolution forward ultimately received death threats, racist comments, vile language, and horrible treatment that was broadcast over a variety of different news outlets and ways in which I could not believe. I was just literally just stunned. I couldn't believe what had happened there. And I think it just speaks again to the importance of that, how much work we as Cornell have to do in this area, in this department. And I think that we have to ensure that we do not lose sight of that, and that one scenario and that one situation, to see that be able to turn into what it turned into, should amplify our voice and the importance of that diversity and inclusion on our campus. And so I just want to stress that piece. I have heard from a staff member that works in my area, you know, about the idea of creation of an equity plan for Cornell University that outlines some key components that would allow for staff to receive in their performance dialogue feedback as it pertains to the equity plan and the work that's done in the realm of diversity and inclusion. I've asked that staff member to provide me with more input, and I think it's a topic that we should continue to focus on and strive towards. So appreciate that we have that input, that it is important to the constituents, and wanted to stress that fact as well from my perspective. Thank you.
Thank you, Brendan. I agree. I mean, I have heard about what's happened on the student assembly, and to provide some feedback, yes, there was a resolution that initially did not pass, but has recently passed in the final student assembly meeting to disarm the police. And so from that, I think there's been a lot of contention and a lot of discussion. And I think that it helps us to know that, you know, staff really do care about diversity and inclusion. And I hope that we'll be able to work on meaningful ways to address that within the staff body. So thank you. Joe?
Hey, I want to thank you for putting that together. It's really a comprehensive view. And I like how you've organized it with, here are the issues, here are some suggestions. But I sat here slack-jawed at the fact that the wellness committee had this very conversation an hour ago. I mean, whoever was there, Michelle, Jessica, Christine, they can all attest to the fact that we were talking about employee mental health. So as you mentioned, kind of aggregating things together, you might want to reach out to Michelle Arterby to get some information and marry these sets of data so that we have a real comprehensive convincing and compelling response to this. But so you did a fabulous job, and Brandon, thank you for all the work that you did.
Joe, I think you bring up a great point. I think working and leveraging the information that we have with other units on campus to really create buy-in and create very helpful change is going to be very important for us moving forward. I know Christy has done a really great job in collaboration with Michelle Arterby and Ruth Merle Doyle, and we just had the other day the winter wind down addressing issues of well-being EA in partnership with Cornell Human Resources. And I hope that we'll continue, you know, to look at ways in which we can help support staff address key issues such as mental health and well-being. And, you know, being a part of that wind down, I think it was tremendously helpful, a lot of great suggestions. And so I hope we can continue thinking about programming and thinking about ways that the Employee Assembly can support, you know, whether it's existing programs or if there are things that, you know, we want to do. So I want to really, I think that this is very opportune, leading us up into the next business of the day, which is staff forums. We just had the panel discussion on well-being. We don't have anything set in stone for the agenda moving forward. I want to bring this really to the body of the Employee Assembly to ask, what do you think the future of staff forums should be? I want us to be very democratic and have a good dialogue on it, because I think we really have a lot of power to plan these discussions and really think about what kind of messaging and what kind of what kind of discussions we want to have with senior leadership or with units across campus to address staff concerns. So I want to sort of open the floor to talk about staff forums and maybe ask what people want to see and how we can sort of work on that moving forward. And I also want to vote on staff forums, which we have not done before. So I want to sort of bring it to everybody and make sure that everybody feels like they have buy-in on this, because you all do, and make this sort of a collaborative effort. So Brian, I see your hand is raised.
Yeah, I raised my hand because when you said that, it did spark some things that I'd like to see brought up and dealt with. We just had a town hall kind of get together with Rick Burgess, and he had Dr. Clark there, and he had Tim Fitzpatrick, and HR, and he had different people, and we're talking about different things that we do or we have been doing, dealing with the COVID response, and who the COVID heroes in our department were, and things like that. And it was a very good forum or town hall for just the employees. I thought it was really good, and I think that we need more response like that. I think that we need more forums to talk about the COVID response and how the administration's dealing with it. There's a lot of unanswered questions. I think that, you know, when we try to bundle it up in an hour, there's no way everything's going to get taken care of in an hour. I think there's a lot more stuff that's going to be happening with the remedy for COVID and how that's going to be administered on campus. And so I think there's plenty of opportunities to have more on COVID. Even though we're all tired of COVID, I think there's more opportunities for learning there, and I'd like to see more done on that.
Thank you. So, I mean, so we had the Cornell Health Forum, then we had the sort of panel on well-being. And so now it sounds like your suggestion is to involve somebody like Rick Burgess of Facilities to talk about, I guess I just want to get a sense of what would be the topic. What would we try to cover with somebody like Rick Burgess?
Not necessarily Rick Burgess. I just say that we need the leaders at Cornell to continue their conversations about, for example, how are they going to administer the antidote on campus, and how they're going to take care of future needs, what's going to happen in the future. It doesn't necessarily have to be Rick Burgess, but, you know, Dr. Clark was amazing at when he talked today. So just, it could be anything, but as long as we keep the conversation that everyone's got at the top of their mind still happening, I think that helps. It helps people get the answers they're looking for. It helps them find resolution within themselves. And like, oh, now I get it. We were talking about the need at that meeting to have more precautionary measures for COVID on campus. And so those things are very, very front and center for much of the staff. So I thought that was very beneficial for the staff.
Okay, thank you, Brian. Ashley?
Yeah, I was just gonna mirror a lot of what Brian said. I've just heard a lot of good feedback about the staff forums, and I know they kind of stemmed from COVID, and I think staff in general appreciate those updates. You know, towing the line on COVID though, people are also, like Brian said, tired of talking about COVID, but I think once a month or every other month, just that update from senior leadership, I think just helps. I don't want to say put staff at ease, but I think it just helps with the conversation. And I think the staff forums are also a great way to disseminate information on really high level topics, because I know we talk micro in our committees, but keeping the staff forums on a really broad macro level across the board, whether it's COVID, maybe once, I know that HR is in the process of talking about remote work. I think it's in infant stages still, but if that really goes somewhere, doing a staff forum on remote work, maybe a staff forum, you know, if we want to talk about major projects that are happening on campus, like the residence halls, I've heard nothing about that since COVID. But I think the staff forums are just a really great way to connect senior leadership with staff concerns in a really broad macro way. And I've heard nothing but good feedback on the ones that we've had thus far.
Thank you. So maybe if anybody has any other suggestions, feel free to email me. So we don't have anything on the calendar for January. I would like to maybe plan something for January or February when we return. But please email me suggestions, and maybe we'll have an online digital vote on this so that, you know, I can get everybody's feedback, and I want everybody to feel involved and included in this process and aware. So seeing no other hands raised, I'd like to move on to the next agenda item, which will be EA sponsorship of initiatives and events. I'm going to have Rigel and Michelle Loparco present on that.
Michelle, do you want me to kick this off?
Sure, if you want.
Go ahead. So in our last exec meeting, which was last Friday, we had a pretty productive conversation about sponsoring events and talks, you know, other things that have gone on in the past. And one of the biggest things we found was that there's really not a documented process or description of how sponsorship should work through the EA in our governing docs. And, you know, it's a great opportunity for us to market the EA and also communicate the events that are going on in throughout these communities on campus, that sort of thing. But it can require a bit of work from our members. So some of the points that were brought up in this conversation was that it might be something good to have the entire EA body vote on and decide how the work on some of these sponsored events would be disseminated among members. Also to have that process documented in our governing docs. So we wanted to bring this up to you guys and see what everybody thought. And Michelle, if there's anything you wanted to add, feel free.
Sure. There is a document in our governing documents outside of the charter and the bylaws. And I think that would be maybe the most logical place to sort of put something in writing about how to make sure that we're all on the same page when it comes to sponsoring events. And I think we just want to be sure that everyone on the EA is aware of our sponsoring of events. I think that in the recent past, there might have been one or two things that we were surprised or, kind of caught off guard that we were co-sponsoring these things. So what we would like to do is to sort of formalize that process a little bit more so that we're all talking the same to each other and not caught off guard, like, oh, we're sponsoring this? Okay, what does that mean for us? We can maybe tackle this during the retreat or we can tackle it offline. But I know in the past, Hey had developed a document for submitting requests to people for information. And I think what we should do is try to, start at that point. If you're approached by an organization within Cornell University as a committee chair, to co-sponsor something, let's open that line of communication so that everyone is aware, that this is something, and then we can figure out how to, to manage that ask and what it entails and stuff like that. That's just the point for the formalizing the process. So.
Thank you. Are there any questions or concerns about this? Opening up the floor for questions, comments. All right, Ellen?
I think just being really transparent about everything that we as an EA body are doing with the whole EA body, and that everyone has a voice and a say in that. Because I think sometimes it's hard when the committees are doing great work, especially this year. Like, we've been doing so much more, I feel, than has been done in the past. But clearly communicating that to the entire EA body is important because, if the EA is sponsoring an event or the EA name is on something, the members should at least A, know about it, and B, should also be in support of that. We don't want to be involved in initiatives that maybe not everyone is on board with. As a full EA body. So I just think keeping that transparency and that communication open is really important.
Thank you. Any other comments, feedback? All right, seeing Ellen again.
Sorry, one more thing that did come up in another conversation we had, I think in the executive level, is also depending on what exactly that sponsorship means, because there are resources, financial and time-wise, that go hand in hand with some of these things that we need to take in consideration as well.
Thank you, Ellen. Christy?
Hi, I have a similar feeling around the appointments that we've made to groups, committees, that I am always shocked and surprised to know that we have somebody working on our behalf in a forum that we never report out on, we don't share any information about. I don't even know the list of where those places are. I feel it's a very similar thing to the events, and maybe we could add that into the conversation.
Christy, I think you bring up a good point. I know that historically in the past, from what I've heard from chairs, there are all these seats that need to be appointed. And I think in the past, there might've been difficulty identifying within the EA group, you know, who would wanna take on that opportunity. And it sounds like maybe some of the decisions have been made in a silo, but I'm a fan of being transparent and making sure we're all part of this process. So maybe we can come up with a list of all the appointees so we know who is in what group assigned from the employee assembly or related to employee representation and share that. And then maybe make a note of, you know, which ones are voted on, or maybe we just say that we should always as a principal vote on them as a body. So that we're all aware of, you know, where everybody lies in all these different organizations. So maybe I'll speak to Gina about that, coming up with a list of that. Jessica?
Yes, and have them report back. We know what they're doing. But I also wanted to bet what I originally wanted to say was, I think having some sort of documentation about events would be fantastic, and in the standing rules makes complete sense. And if there's ways we can help, that's great. Let us know.
Thank you. Gina, your hand is raised.
Just related to where to place the whatever your policies are on sponsoring events, the standing rules, just a reminder, they expire at the end of the term. So they do not persist from year to year. If you're looking for something that's just for this current assembly, that's a great spot. But if you're thinking about things that would persist, you might look at the bylaws.
Thank you, Gina. Seeing no other hands raised, I'd like to move on to agenda item 6, Benefits and Policy Committee Resolution EAR5. So I'm gonna send the floor over to Michelle to talk about that.
Great. So in the Benefits and Policy Committee, I recommended that we thank the administration for their continued support of staff during COVID-19 in light of the announcements that were made on November 17. So I shared along with the agenda a copy of this resolution in the box. And if folks have had a chance to take a look at it and have any comments and feedback, would love to hear it. But I was hoping that if we've all had a chance to review this resolution, that we might bring it to the floor today. I can read it line by line if everybody would like me to, but in the interest of time, I think that I'll forego that.
Thank you. So we're going to open the floor up for discussion on this. So usually what happens is we bring a resolution to the floor, we discuss it, we don't vote on it. We can bring it up during new business after the committee reports for a vote if you all feel comfortable for it. So we're now just only discussing it, comments, feedback, questions. So I'm going to begin with Brian.
So yeah, I'd just like to add on to what Michelle said. We continued our discussion on this resolution, thanking the administration for their continued support. And the committee worked hard on this resolution at our meeting yesterday. And when we thought it was ready for presentation to the full body and it was complete, we took a vote. The committee, the majority of the BPC committee passed it. We had one abstention. And it was ready to present to the EA. So I'm totally fully in support of this resolution. I just wanted to relay that.
Any other questions or concerns or comments? This is the time for open discussion. Seeing none, I'm going to move on to the committee reports and we can return to this in new business. So I guess I will make a motion to end discussion and move on to the committee reports. We can vote on this during new business. Do I get a second on that? Joe, I see his hand is raised. Okay, so let's move to committee reports. So it's Michelle, you again with the executive committee.
Sure. So we met on Friday the 11th, and we talked about the priorities poll, which we've discussed today, the staff forum, which we discussed today, and then the wellness panel and sort of EA workload. So those were our main topics of conversation, and I think we covered it all today in our meeting. I don't think there's any, we didn't discuss anything outside of those items that were on our agenda today.
Thank you. Are there any questions or concerns? Seeing no hands raised, let's move on to Communications and Awards Committee. Ellen.
Hello, everyone. I'm unprepared as usual, but I'll look at my chicken scratch notes and see what I can come up with. Let's see. Well, we had the panel discussion on Monday and all the communications leading up to that happened. So that's good. We published the EA Voice newsletter on Monday. That happened. We did try to focus after receiving some feedback from strategic communications within university relations. We did try to focus the newsletter more centrally on the employee assembly and to highlight employee assembly kind of partnerships and interaction with each of the things that we put in the newsletter. So I would love anyone has any feedback on that. On the content or anything, I would appreciate that. As well, if anyone from committee level or independent level has anything that they would like to see highlighted in a future newsletter, please always reach out to us. We're happy to do that and to work with you to get something published in there. We plan for our next newsletter mid-January, and we hope to publish some information regarding the priorities poll results. And that's kind of all we have for now. Let's see. Awards and recognition. I mentioned last time we have been working on the George Peter Award, and we have submitted some information to the OA office, and we're hoping to review that probably after the return from winter break, or maybe next week if if I'm not too hopeful thinking, Gina, but she's saying no. I think there's probably a lot going on before then. So we hope to review early January and get that off the ground in the coming year. And I think that's about it for right now. We did talk about how a lot of the events and partnerships that the Employee Assembly is contributing to do have a sort of higher impact on the communications side of things. So we talked about how we can, as a committee, kind of better work that, like share that workload, I guess, and also how we can work with the EA in general to kind of clean communications around that stuff and make sure that it makes sense. And that's all I got for now.
Thank you, Ellen. Are there any questions, comments? Seeing no hands raised. Thank you, Ellen. I think you've been doing a great job with communications. Jessica Withers with the Education Committee.
Not a lot to report, but I did set up meetings for the committee January through May, or whenever our term ends, and monthly meetings, those are on the calendars. And I went through the notes and got up to date on what the committee had done already and discussed already. So I've got some follow-up tasks for myself, and then starting in January, we'll get right back to work. I was hoping to have the priorities poll info for the next meeting, and sounds like I will. So thank you.
Thank you. Any questions, comments? Thank you, Jessica Withers, for taking on the role of the chair of this committee. Moving on to the Welfare Committee, Christy Mahoney.
Hello. We met just before this meeting. As Jill mentioned, we spent a significant amount of time talking about basically feedback on the panel and themes and patterns that the welfare, work life, and wellness team have been hearing, issues of employee burnout, family life toll, manager care fatigue, issues like that, and discussed at length ideas for 2021 programming and a lot of discussion around mental health, around what can happen when flexibility isn't enough. Michelle can offer a lot of really powerful commentary around just what happens in work teams when you know, you just can't be any more flexible. Talked about what implications there may be on staff with the break. The break sounds great on the surface, but will it feel restorative, or will there be implications of isolation, implications of exhaustion, things like that. They call it the catch up. We talked about the work, the home alone for winter break programming that's being offered. And then a couple updates. Big Red Rights program has 260 participants. It's off and running. And a couple words of caution. The Child Care Hardship Fund is 90% spent down. So encourage within your constituencies, if anyone hasn't applied yet, they should. There was an ask for additional funding that was not met. So when this money's gone, it's gone. And then there's a new coalition that's been developed through the CAPE, which is retired faculty, HR, Cornell students, and the Child Development Council downtown, which is focused on saving the childcare industry in the community. It's called Adopt a Classroom. There'll be more information about that coming in January.
Thank you. That was really comprehensive. Are there any questions for Christy? Seeing none, we will move on to Benefits and Policy Committee. Brian?
Hi. I'm just sitting here thinking I'm envious because I don't have no hair to twirl with. Darn it. the BPC met yesterday and reviewed correspondences that we received concerning the Belonging at Cornell survey. Angelo Winfield responded to our email and relayed that the timing of the releasing the survey information has been pushed out towards mid-January. Since then, I have talked to Christine Mahoney, and she's going to reach out and see if maybe we can do a joint meeting with the BPC and the Welfare Committee meeting when they're ready to present, so they don't have to do it twice, and see if they can present the whole pack together, or if they really feel it'd be better to be separated. So Christina's following up on that and gonna see if that's beneficial. We also discussed correspondence with Mary Opperman concerning the issue of release time from work for serving on official university committees. We asked Mary through Hey Hey if she would be able to share the policy with chairs, deans, and directors as a reminder of the university's stance on release time for serving on official university committees. Mary has responded, and she would work with Ashley Fazio to share the policy with the leaders, so we appreciate that, and thank you, AA, for bringing that forward. We then continued our discussion on the resolution that you heard earlier, thanking the administration for continued support. Supporting staff during COVID-19. We turned it into a working meeting where we worked on that policy for quite a substantial amount of time. And so we'd be able to present it at this meeting today. I'm really happy that we were able to get that done on time. Michelle's a driver of that. So thank you for pushing me, Michelle. And with that, I think that about covers it.
Thank you, Brian. Are there any questions? Concerns, seeing no hands raised. I don't see Nazar here from the Elections Committee. Is there anybody from the Elections Committee that can give an update? Ellen?
No update. We have not met since the last meeting.
All right, sounds good. I want to make a motion to extend the meeting by about 10 minutes if possible to talk about new business. Do I get Brian? I believe that's a second. And then Michelle, is there any dissent to extending this meeting by 10 minutes? Seeing none, we will extend this meeting by 10 minutes. I want to move into new business. I believe Joe had an item that he wanted to discuss. His hand is raised, so I'm going to open this up to Joe.
Okay, this is a shameless plug. Tomorrow, the LGBTQ plus colleague network group has its monthly meeting. It is not limited to folks who identify as part of the LGBTQ plus community. Allies and supporters are more than welcome. We always are gonna start with a fun game, and somehow that always lands on my lap. So you have the opportunity to see me make an ass of myself. And then there's a serious conversation that we all have. So I wanna just extend the invitation to all colleagues and friends on the EA.
Can you share a link either to the Employee Assembly listserv or through this chat so we can sort of participate in that? Are there any questions about this?
Yeah, there's no sign up. It's just log on to the Zoom. But okay.
Ellen, you have a question? Your hand is raised.
Yes, I wanted to know, do you have usually a specific topic that you're addressing in your monthly meetings, or is it just an open discussion?
Typically what we try to do is, well, what we're trying to move toward is having one month be more like a serious conversation, where 2 months ago it was the importance of pronouns and why that's important to our community. Last month, it was just a silly meeting with fun conversation. So it'll be at lunchtime, a little socializing with a special guest, Casey Benson from Cornell Health. So you may get some tips, hey, if you wanna, again, mine the conversation for information. And Ms. Benson or Dr. Benson is gonna be discussing navigating the holiday season during the pandemic, which I know is up on a lot of people's minds. So again, the invitation is open to all.
And Joe, yes. You said this is the colleague network group, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Is there an email address that I can forward this to?
Yeah, sure. I will send that to you. All right. So I will email Joe with that. Is there any other topics that anybody wants to bring up in open discussion, new business right now? Brian?
Yes, I would like to bring back the proposal that we look at EARFI.
Okay, do you want to bring a motion to vote on this resolution now?
I do.
Okay, great. We have, I believe, 16 members. So is this quorum? Are we able to vote on this?
Yes, I think you're 30 members. I'll double check, but I think you're just over. You just have quorum. Let me
be sure. Okay, perfect. All right, so motion to vote on this resolution. Please use the yes button to vote yes, no to vote no, and then type in abstain if you would like to abstain.
Hey.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Sorry, I have that the EA is 35 members, is that right?
Oh.
So you do not have quorum.
I don't think 35 is correct, Gina.
I thought it was 29 with like a one shared seat.
35 will be the spring when we have the four new at-large members and the school of public policy seat, I think.
Actually, unless I'm mistaken, I think Gina is correct. I just pulled a list of EA members from the website, taking out the vacant seats, and I have 34 names.
Does that include Gina and Wendy?
It does.
Also Victoria, and then the duplicates. So
the some duplicates of us are listed twice. duplicates I took out.
So we're really looking at voting members. So are we filtering for voting members?
I did not, but I can try. I can't try quickly. No, I'd have to re-download it. Sorry.
That's okay.
I can tell you right now that we have 32 members on my list.
That was from the roll call?
Yes. I think
that sounds right to me.
So. Okay, so then right now we have, it looks like 16 members on here from Employee Assembly. So this is exactly half of Michelle's count then.
Which is not a majority.
Yeah.
So unfortunately, we do not have quorum. We cannot vote. We do have 11 votes, but however, that does not count. I'm sorry, Employee Assembly. It sounds like we will need to vote on R5 during our next Employee Assembly meeting. Sorry about that. In the final 5 minutes, I want to ask if anybody has any other additional new business that they would like to get to. Ellen?
I just wanted to know if it's possible to hold a vote outside of meeting. Like
we can vote virtually. I believe Christy Mahoney typed in the same thing. So what we can do is I can email the Employee Assembly and with a copy of R5 and ask for them to submit a virtual vote. So yeah. I think that might be a good way to go. So I think we're all in agreement with that. Michelle, your hand is raised.
Quick question for those who are abstaining. Should we have just more discussion or? Do we need more time to review this or is there?
I don't think I like that question, but I don't know why.
I know, I'm just trying to figure out, I mean, if by abstaining, are people abstaining because they haven't had enough time to review it or not? If they would like to review it, then not having a quorum works in our favor so folks can have more time to review and make changes. So
this is Lisa. I actually do have a question about it.
Sure.
Oh, just because, you know, wasn't it in November or something, there was an ER resolution already for senior leadership. And I feel it's just so soon after that one to be recognizing them again. That's my only thought.
Lisa, you bring up a good point. There is another resolution, R10 from, I believe that was created in April by Chris Barth. So this was the prior Employee Assembly group in recognition of senior leadership for what they had done in response to COVID. I believe that there is a difference between this resolution and that resolution. So I'm going to open the floor for maybe Michelle or Brian, whose hand is raised to talk about the difference between those two resolutions. But thank you for bringing that up, Brian.
Yeah, so this one is the continued support. Since that first resolution went through, quite a few changes have happened. They restored our retirement. I'm trying to remember the list. I'm looking at the resolution to do it. They did something with the benefits I thought was really cool for the endowed side. They didn't have any increase in healthcare benefits. After they achieved their savings and everything, they did exactly what they said they would do. The senior leadership revisited it and they returned full retirement benefits and full salaries for contracts and did everything they said, I guess. I'm not sure of the whole list, but it was a little bit different because of that. Did that help?
Thank you, Brian. I believe Jamie's hand is raised.
Yeah, so I mean, I abstained before I knew that the vote wasn't happening. I've just heard from a number of constituents that they sort of feel like getting their benefits back, it's like being paid with their own coin, and like it's not necessarily something that deserves like a big congratulatory hurrah, because it's, you know, if the university was making a plan to pay back the money that was taken over the next 5 years or something, that they would support a big thank you for that. But I think they're reserving, they would like to reserve their big thank you for something beyond just giving us back our own stuff.
That's a very fair point. Thank you.
This is, I know I put some folks on the spot by asking, but you know, I'm not hearing that from my constituents, and so this is great. I'm glad that you came forward and shared that, because I didn't, you know, I wasn't hearing that. And so it's very important that we hear from everyone, because we don't want to put out a resolution that isn't fair, you know, isn't seen as, you know, appropriate by all of our constituents. So I thank you for that.
Thank you, Michelle. Lisa, did you have any additional comments?
No, I totally agree though with Jamie.
Okay, it is now 1:40. The time has expired. Is there a motion to extend this meeting further, or a motion to end this meeting? I wanna open that up to everyone. Ellen?
I definitely move to end.
End, okay. So do I get a second on ending at 1:40? Chrissy Mahoney, thank you. Any dissent? Seeing none, we're going to table this resolution, bring it up. Will we table it, or will I bring it up for a vote? Gina?
You can table it and then bring it up for a vote by email.
Okay,
So
I will table it and bring it up for a vote via email, and then bring up the issues that Jamie brought, and then I hope that within the vote we'll sort of get consensus on that. With that said, I'm going to end the meeting at 1:41. I want to wish you all a happy holiday season. Have a great break. Gina, I'm not sure if you were waving or if you had...
I was going to say, related to Ellen had asked if we could help out next week. Neither Wendy nor I, or both Wendy and I, are going to be taking next week off completely. So the office, if there's anything that you need between now and January 4th, send me an email this week.
All right. Thank you. So with that said, thank you all. Have a great holiday break.
This has been a production of Cornell University on the web at cornell.edu.